Good morning, Criswell. Come in. Make yourselves comfortable. Find a seat. Welcome to week 9. Is that kind of scary for you? This is week 9, and you still haven't started on that one paper for that one class, right? Well, welcome to week 9. So we have a great chapel planned for you today, and I will leave the explanation of that to Dr. Creamer in just a few moments. But I want to give you just a few announcements. We have a new student organization starting on campus. We'll have to come up with some kind of cool, you know, Trip C APA or something, but it's the Criswell College Counseling and Psychology Association. Now, if you're interested in that, you have to be in that field, so pursuing that degree to be a part of this student organization. They're going to have their first meeting on October 18th from 5 to 6:30 p.m. down here in Horner Hall. And if you're interested, RSVP with Naomi. And so she's going to head this up and get your interest. And so be a part of that if you'd like to be a part. So good stuff. And if you want to form your own student organization, there is a process that you go through to have a student organization, to have it officially recognized. And so see the student services office if you have something you might like to do. There might be a way for you to get that established. I want to put that out there as well. All right, second thing, Criswell Cinema. Unfortunately, because of the weather, had to be bumped to October 26th. So you didn't miss your opportunity. October 26th, we're going to get together still, same time. We're going to meet, watch the same movie, hopefully in the same courtyard, but minus the rain, okay? So it'll be nice weather. We'll be able to be out there together. Bring your family, bring your friends. If you've already RSVP'd, if that has changed, let them know. So if one date worked for you, but this date doesn't, just let them know so they can adjust and know how many to prepare for. So there's the second announcement. And the third announcement is Dissertation Days with Dr. Terry Moore on October 30th at 12:15, and lunch is provided. That's all the information I have on that. If you need more information, see Hayden about that, and Hayden will get you the information you need to participate in that and sit down and talk with Dr. Moore about the structure of her dissertation, the content of it, those types of things. So all that is good stuff. That's all the announcements I have. So with no further ado, let's worship. Why don't we worship first? Yeah, this is so different. So Ryan, come out and lead us in a song of worship, and then Dr. Creamer is going to come and lead us through chapel today. So Ryan, please.
Well, we are doing something a little different today. I'm going to have an interview with a guest and a friend of mine that I've seen doing ministry for a long time to give you an example. But I want about 10 minutes with you before I invite her up here for the interview portion of today's chapel, because I want to explain why this is so important. We've been talking about some core values at the college that we think represent who we've been for the last 48 years and are also the foundation for what we want to see in you when you graduate, when you go out and do your ministry, and what we want to see in us as leaders in the college, what we want to be present in our lives. And those core values include doctrinal integrity, doctrinal faithfulness, that we are grounded in the truth of Scripture, and so on. They include academic engagement, that we're involved with legitimate academics and all the things that are involved with being a part of the academy in the world of intellectual development and growth and all that kind of stuff. And it involves cultural influence, that we want to make a difference. We want to be leaders. We want to be people who produce change in the church and in the culture. But it also includes a service, not just a, but service experience. So, and when I say it that way, it's, you know, we would say ministry experience. But a lot of times we hear the word ministry, and in the church or out of the church, we misappropriate it into sort of a vocation or a statement about whether you wear a collar or not, or whether you're wearing a collar or not, just this tendency to understand it as what clergy do and maybe other people volunteer to do on occasion or something like that. And it loses entirely the nature of the word, the meaning of the word, which is serving people. That's what you do. When you become a minister, you become a servant, a person who is taking care of others regardless of what it brings back for you. And so when we say a ministry experience, we mean service experience. We mean giving yourself to other people. And what, you know, what that entails is not just doing stuff that's of value to other people, because a lot of times we do stuff all the time. We're doing stuff that's of value for other people because we have to in order to live. If you draw a salary, it's because you're doing something that's of value for other people, but you're doing it for your salary. You're not doing it because you serve them. You can do it because you serve them and draw a salary. You can do both at the same time. But what makes it service is that you're doing it for them without regard of what comes back to you. That's what makes it ministry or service itself. You may get the benefit of it, but that's not what determines that you do it. You understand what I'm saying? So it's a form of altruism. It's a form of caring about others instead of yourself. Are you with me so far? All right. Now, all that said, the nature of the service that we do as believers is that we serve and care about people who otherwise would not be served or cared about. The nature of Jesus' ministry, that he serves those who are outcasts, that are rejected by everybody else, isn't that the rich don't need some kind of service as well, but that it's easy for us to see the wealthy as people whose needs are already met. They can pay for it. They can go out and get it themselves. They're already respected by everyone. People bow to them and give them what they want. That's not true in terms of their deepest needs. It's not true that the wealthy inherently receive the gospel, for instance. It's not true that the wealthy actually find psychological fulfillment in their lives. It's not true that all of their needs are actually met, but they're an easy example of people who can have some of their needs met, and so somebody needs to go and take care of everybody else, the poor. And so Jesus uses that as a way to illustrate the need to take care of the vulnerable. And it's not something that originates in Jesus' ministry. He is simply bringing to fulfillment the righteous requirement of the Old Testament and then the things that we see later replicated in the life of the apostles and their demand for people who are in the church. So you're understanding where I'm going so far. This is why we want to serve people whose needs would not be met otherwise. We want to reach out to people who are vulnerable populations, populations in need of any kind. And so the one passage that I want to mention to you in Proverbs is Proverbs 24, it's verses 11 and 12, and I'm not going to preach a sermon from it. I would love to. I've done it before from this text, but I just want to point out this one, the nature of this statement. If you forbear to deliver those who are drawn to death, those who are ready to be slain, if you say, behold, we knew it not, doesn't he that ponders the heart know it? And he that guards your soul and theirs, doesn't he know it? And isn't he going to pay you back and every other man according to your works or his works? Meaning, you knew you could do something to help this person who was vulnerable and you didn't do it. God knows that, and he'll hold you accountable for it. Now, it's easy for us to see this as simply talking about those who are drawn to death. I'll use that illustration, that explanation in just a moment. But it's just an extreme form of what he tells us to do for every vulnerable population, for everyone who's in need. If you can help them, you're supposed to help them. If they're poor, you should help them. If they're in your field, you should allow them to, you know, take from the edges of your field the wheat that they need and so on. So those vulnerable populations. And that's even illustrated just a few verses later in another proverb when it says, don't rejoice when your enemy falls, and don't let your heart be glad when he stumbles, lest the Lord see it, and it displease him, and he turn away his anger from him. Even the person God himself is angry at, and he's your enemy, when that person becomes vulnerable, we're supposed to stop taking any joy. Even if we were participating in the battle, at the point where they are beginning to be vulnerable and suffering, we're supposed to have some compassion that makes us say, oh no, this is a person now who's in need. I don't rejoice in that. I'm sorry that he's suffering. So we don't rejoice in the death of the wicked, for instance, in Ezekiel. So you get the idea. Vulnerable populations are something important to the Lord. So this is why I'm just taking a few minutes to make these points, but it'll get right where we need to go in just a moment. Just bear with me for a second. But this is why it mystifies me that we can live where we do and not see the vulnerability of the populations who are around us. So this is why I feel lost so many times politically right now, because I want somebody to stand up and defend the interest of people who are vulnerable around us, who include immigrants who are around us, and unborn people. So embryos, people who are growing in the womb, or people who've been created by in vitro fertilization and were never implanted. You know, those are vulnerable populations. Why doesn't anybody just care for both of those populations? It really frustrates me that we can't find that. and looking, you know, listening to some of the ads that I hear right now, I'm just making the point. Listening to some of the ads I have, I want to rewrite some of the ads and say, you know, all these people, they committed murder, they committed rape, they committed all these horrible crimes, and every single one of them dared to be born. You know, they were born. Why did we let them across that threshold? Why did we let them come into the world? How many unwanted children? How many children who came from a pregnancy that was unexpected went on to commit crimes? I don't know. But they bear the image of God. So we care about their life and we respect them and we care about their vulnerability because they bear the image of God, not because they will or won't do something that's good or bad. We care about what they do that's good or bad also, but that's a separate issue. That doesn't change the value of the person nor our obligation to serve them and to represent them as a vulnerable population. So on the immigration side, that's why I'm so outside the field of a lot of people in this room would disagree with me on the issue of immigration. That's fine. But it isn't okay with me that we neglect any vulnerable population. We have to take up that cause. And so that's what we are saying, and this is what drives me crazy. I would love to just be able to say, okay, well, I'm just going to go vote for people because the election's coming up. I'm just going to go vote for people who are pro-immigration, you know, who are helping to defend the immigrants. But every time I go and find people like that, I find people who are not caring about this vulnerable population that's in the womb. They act like they don't exist, like it doesn't matter at all, and it matters just as much. I want both of those populations to be defended. And if you don't recognize the value of those lives, I cannot imagine a population more represented by Proverbs 24, 11, and 12 in our culture than the unborn. If you forbear to deliver those who are drawn to death, if you know that these little children are going to be killed, then intervene. So I care about abortion. I always will. It's the pro-life movement has sometimes been excellent and sometimes been misguided, I think, in the way they've expressed what they've done. And I've been a part of it from the very beginning. But the motive for it and the cause for it is undeniably important. These are the most vulnerable people conceivable. And I mean the pun. I can't even begin to talk about it very much without just losing control of my emotions. It's almost unbelievable that someone would consider that unimportant if you're aware of what's happening in the womb, if you're aware of the life that's there. So the issue of life is not something I can just discount or I can say is unimportant. I could never do that. So I say, okay, well, do something about it, you know? Do something about it. So as a preacher for years, you know, I got up and preached about abortion, talked about, you know, we had Sanctity of Life Sunday, and we had it all the time, not just on, you know, in January. But we would go out and, you know, do the prayer across the city and hold hands and hold up banners and pray outside of abortion clinics and all that kind of stuff. And I'm in favor of any of that. I mean, anything to draw attention to the needs of these little lives that are neglected otherwise. But then I realized eventually that there is another neglected group in that mix. When, you know, in preaching, like one Sunday I was preaching about abortion, this young woman got up and walked out, you know, angry, but also you could tell kind of crying, and it was obvious. I mean, she was, you can never tell why people are doing what they do. I wrote about that yesterday for a different group. But in this case, it was true. And she was responding because she'd had an abortion and she felt offended or attacked, you know, and I didn't know she'd had an abortion. But it also made me recognize that in our culture, we say to women from the time they're born, we say to women, look, you have three choices here. You can have the baby, you can adopt the baby out, or you can have an abortion. And when a young woman who's 17 or a woman who's in the throes of her career at 45 finds herself pregnant by surprise, in a marriage or out of a marriage, it's a life-altering moment for them. They can panic. They don't know what to do, you know? This changes their entire future and what they're going to do. And the whole culture is telling them and making it available and saying it's just a procedure. And so they go and they have an abortion. And no matter how much regret they have, no matter how much sorrow they have, they can't undo it. And then they go to church, and all they hear is how wicked they were, when the whole society was telling them it was okay. We're going to face that same crisis with young people. We are right now with young people who are having questions about their identity and gender. The whole society is telling them to think one way about it. They go to church and the whole church tells them, you're an idiot if you think that way, and makes fun of them. And then they have nowhere to go. They have nowhere to... I'm not saying they're right. I'm not saying it's okay. But I am saying we're supposed to be the ones who care and are kind toward those vulnerable populations. And so I learned to say, and I believe this, and I mean it. I know there are women here who've had abortions. There's just no doubt. Statistically, it's just not possible that we have a room of this number of women and none of them have had abortions. But I'm not here to say, oh, you know, you deserve a scarlet A and you'll never be acceptable and you could never do ministry. And this is what God does. He forgives. He forgives, but he forgives the things we confess and acknowledge. So I would say acknowledge it and confess it to God, but allow him to forgive you and heal you as well. And if we don't provide that service toward women, we're being as neglectful of the responsibility God has given us as we are if we don't care about the unborn in the womb, or if we don't care about the immigrant down the street. Our neighbor, our 7-Eleven neighbor, who was kind enough to give us a letter and say, hey, I want you to be able to get Bird Street and all this kind of stuff, they helped us. They were kind to us, went out of our way. You know, they were raided by the federal government right after the last election cycle. They were raided along with a bunch of others because they're a 7-Eleven, and they have people who work there who look like they probably aren't from America. And I know the immigrant office would say, oh, it's not because of that, it's not because of appearances, but they hadn't violated anything. They had to turn up all the paperwork to show that everybody who worked there had their green card and all that kind of stuff. Now, I'm okay. I get it. I get why that happened. I'm not even saying it shouldn't have happened. But I am saying, when you walk in there and say, hey, look, we're glad you're in our neighborhood. We're thankful for the work that you do. Thankful for what you provide for us. Then at least you're reaching out to somebody and saying, you don't just have enemies around here. You have somebody who cares about you and who wants to take up your cause, you know. That kind of thing is important. And so serving women who have had abortions, who haven't had abortions, who find themselves in a crisis pregnancy is one way that you can serve a vulnerable population in our midst. And they're everywhere. They're everywhere. In this society, in our churches, they're everywhere. So how do we serve them? Well, I've got an example of how that happens, and I'm not giving you this example so that you will only get involved with this ministry, this option, this opportunity. But I am giving it to you for that reason as well. So if you're interested in the ministry that we're going to describe today, we actually have people here who can help you sign up for it, get involved with it, and serve, because I think it's a great place to serve, and you need service experience outside of what you were already doing before you came to the college. You need to expose yourself to how to do ministry, how to create ministry, how to maintain a ministry, how to build a ministry, and all that kind of stuff, a service to people. So this is a good opportunity to do that, but also so that you'll just say to yourself, there are all kinds of people who are around me who have needs that were created by things that I disagree with or things I agree with. It doesn't matter. But they are now in need. And this is a person in front of me. How do I serve this person? In your community, where you're going to put a clinic, or where you're going to be serving in the school, or where you're going to be building your business, or where your family is going to plant themselves, or where your church is going to be built, in your community, there are going to be populations of people who are not served by anyone else, or who need someone to take up their cause. And figuring out how to do that is really important. So I want to invite somebody to come and join me on the stage. So I'm going to introduce her, and I want you to welcome her as well. So this is Carolyn Klein. First of all, give her some encouragement for being here. And if you'll come up and join me, Carolyn, I'd appreciate it. She's going to sit right over here. Carolyn Klein is the executive director, president, big wampus, whatever you call the person, you know, in charge at Involved for Life, which some of you have known in the past as the Downtown Pregnancy Center, but it's more than that now. It's an umbrella organization, Involved for Life, that includes right now the Downtown Pregnancy Center, which is going to change. I'll let her tell you about that in just a second. But the Downtown Pregnancy Center, the Uptown Women's Center, and then Sonograms on site. And it is a, obviously, they believe in the sanctity of human life, and they are trying to save babies' lives. But they're doing it by serving women. So where I love to pontificate politically and where I want to make a difference in public policy and where I hope for these changes to happen legally and all that kind of stuff, the reality is somebody needs to serve the women who are in need right now. And so this is what Carolyn Klein does. And she's also joined by Vicky and Karen, who are with her, who help her run things there. And if y'all will just wave your hands so everybody can see you. If you over time recognize as you're listening to this, you say, I think I could volunteer there, or I could help there in some way. Catherine, you've done some over there. You've gone over there and seen the clinic, things like that. But there are people in the room who've been involved over there, but there are many of you who haven't, and you might have an opportunity to help, and you'll see that there may be a way you can help. Then you could talk to them, or you can talk to Carolyn and get involved with it. So first of all, Carolyn, thanks for coming and joining us. But
My pleasure. I
want to invite you to just share what your overall vision of purpose for the ministry is, what it looks like right now, what y'all are trying to do. So.
Well, our mission statement says that we want to educate and empower women to make life-affirming decisions. We believe there is great power in truth, and so we want women to understand when they're talking about having an abortion that they need to understand what that procedure is. Part of our ministry is post-abortion ministry. So many women say, I had no idea. I had no idea what I was doing. And sometimes they don't know until they're pregnant in a married relationship later on with a pregnancy that they want to have, and they go and have that sonogram, and they realize that's a life, and it takes them back to that experience that may be 5 years in their past, 10 years in their past, and thought, oh, I took a life at that point. And so for us, it's very important that we educate women. In the state of Texas, there's this little book called A Woman's Right to Know. It is a law in our state that if a woman has an abortion, that she is required to know all the information and go through the information that's in this booklet. Abortion clinics, the way they handle it is when someone calls to book an appointment, they tell them about this booklet, say, go to our website, there's a link to it, read it, and when you come in, they just sign a statement, say yes, they've read it. For us, we go through it. We go through that information. We educate them exactly about what an abortion procedure is, the different types of abortion procedures, fetal development. We let them understand that a heart does start beating at 21 days. In fact, there's a new study I just read where they have detected a heartbeat at 16 days after conception. It's before a woman even misses her period and knows she's really pregnant. So it's just amazing. We want her to understand that so that she doesn't ever think later when someone told her it was just a lump of tissue or a lump of cells, and she realizes later that that was a life. So we want her to know that, and that's what we do now. We educate, and then we take it a step further after we've given them the information. We do an ultrasound, a sonogram, and so they get to see what we've been talking about, and we call it the God machine because all the things that we've been talking about that God does in creating life, they begin to see for themselves, and they can see the heart beating. We usually can pick that up at 6 weeks. I think our earliest is 5 weeks, 4 days that we've actually been able to pick up the heartbeat on a sonogram machine. And there is just something that happens when you see that fluttering heartbeat. I mean, all of us know if you see a heart beating, there is life. At the end of life, when when somebody's heart stops beating, we know that that's the end of life. And so to see a heart beating means there is life there. And so there is an opportunity there for a woman to not only recognize there's a heartbeat and there's a life, but that's the life of her child that's growing in her womb. Also, is very useful for those who are what we call the influencers in her life, whether it's a boyfriend, her best friend who knows about the pregnancy. It could be her mom, her dad, or her grandparent that comes with her, all believing that abortion is in her very best interest. And it's amazing to see what happens within that ultrasound, in that sonogram room, when they, too, see that life and realize, there's my grandchild, or for the boyfriend, there's my baby. That's mine too. And just to understand that we're talking about a life. We're not talking about a clump of cells. And yes, the circumstances haven't changed at all. Whatever her circumstances are, they have not changed. But suddenly there is a bonding process that goes on with this child. And then we surround her. We surround her with all kinds of support, and him too. We want the fathers of the babies to be involved. And so we do all kinds of support services. We do lots of teaching, because remember, I said we want to educate, because we do believe that education is what empowers them to make this decision. And so we do all kinds of preparation for becoming a parent, and labor and delivery classes. The dads do classes as well. They learn how to swaddle a baby and diaper a baby, and it's really a lot of fun. There's a lot of joy that goes on. This part of an Earn While You Learn program, so they're earning mommy bucks and daddy bucks, and we have a store where they can go and get the things that they need to prepare for that baby. So it also helps in a very material way, and helps them financially as well. They can actually earn their car seat and their port-a-crib and their diapers and all the things that they'll need once that baby arrives. And then they can stay in our program for 3 years after that baby is born, receiving parenting education and learning how to take care of that child, also being discipled as well. We hope that they have at some point allowed us the opportunity to share the gospel with them. They've certainly experienced the gospel when they've walked in. From the moment they walk in their door, they constantly say, this place feels different. It's unlike anything else I've ever experienced. And that's just the Holy Spirit. That's the love of Christ that's being poured out on them. And so, yes, it is all about service. It's about serving people. I'm not saying that they're all easy, because they're not. Some are very angry. We've had homeless folks that have been there. Lots of international people that come, because, as you know, our city is a melting pot for lots and lots of different international people that are coming in. And so it is an amazing way to go on the mission field without ever leaving Dallas, because the mission field comes to us.
Give me the most recent year that you have a number off the top of your head for how many people you saw, or how many lives, how many babies you saw where the abortion-minded mother changed her mind.
Okay. Well, last year, in 2017, we saw a little over 1,800 women, and of those, not all were pregnant. We also do STD screening services, so some come in just for that, and they're not pregnant. Some who think they are aren't. But of that, 458 women chose life for their babies. So we had 458 babies that we know were saved last year. We also had 115 people make decisions for Christ in our center. This year, we've already had 233 decisions for Christ in our center. It is just amazing the way the Holy Spirit is moving. And I want you to understand that we do not beat people over the head with a Bible when they walk in through our doors, but we ask for the opportunity. They actually sign off and say, yes, they would like spiritual information. They're hungry. The saying, no atheist in a foxhole.
Yeah, there you go.
they are desperate to have some hope, because their situation seems very, very hopeless.
And I know you all let them know right off the bat that you don't provide abortion services,
right,
and you won't refer them to an abortion
right.
clinic, and yet they come anyway. And
yes,
they come asking for help. But some are going to say, no, I don't want to hear the gospel. Mm-hmm. I don't want the spiritual advice. Mm-hmm. You still serve them?
Of course.
Okay, all the way to the end, however far they want to go.
Well, they're still getting the gospel. They just don't hear it orally.
And then the other side of that is you have women who come and they choose to have an abortion.
Yes.
How do they leave? Are you?
We tell them that we are there for them, to support them regardless of what they choose. Because ultimately, we all have a choice. God has given that to us. He has given us the ability to make our own choices. And so we can't rob her of that choice. We're not going to lock her in a room and say, no, you can't leave if you're planning on aborting. But we tell her we're there for her regardless of what she chooses. And we have post-abortion recovery as well.
So, do you have these classes, post-abortion recovery? Are those classes? Do you have, and how often do you have a lot of people who participate in that? I'm just curious how that part of the ministry is going.
It varies.
Uh-huh.
We have people that are post-abortive 30 years post-abortive.
Right.
And they're just coming to that point of going, I've got to deal with this now. Mm-hmm. Got to deal with this now. And then we have, this year we've had someone who was just 1 week post-abortive, who was just in pieces. I think there's one young lady who's going through recovery right now, and I think she was just a year. She was a senior at Baylor last year.
So I want to point something out that everybody needs to be aware of. So when you're doing this and a person walks in the door and they need prenatal care and they need a class on advice, you know, and then they need a labor and delivery class, you know, how do I breathe when I'm doing this or whatever.
And spoken like a man.
And then you're telling men how to change diapers, which I wouldn't find helpful at all, by the way. But anyway, when you're doing all of that, how much does it cost for anyone who comes in the door and is asking for help?
It costs their time to come.
Okay. So there's no money involved at all on their part.
Right.
But you're getting money somewhere. So where are you getting the money? Because it costs a lot of money to do this. So this is a really important part of your promise to serve other people. Mm-hmm. I'm just telling you, it costs money to serve people.
Yes, it does.
And so just tell us where you get the money. How do you do this? How much of your budget is raised from people donating money to your clinic?
100%.
Okay.
Yes.
And what's your budget? Just what's the budget for the whole thing, for Sonograms on Side, Uptown Women's Center?
$1.3 million this year.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So every dollar of that has to come from somebody just saying, here, mm-hmm. here's a check. Mm-hmm. Take a check. How much of your work would you say goes to that? I've never asked you this before, but I'm just kind of curious. How much of your work goes to raising money?
At least half of my time is spent telling the story in hopes that people want to come along and support financially.
Okay. And I'm not saying that to you so you'll say to yourselves, oh, I'm going to have to raise money for the rest of my life. But so you'll know, it's not evil to go out and ask people to give money to help people like this, you know, who are making life-changing decisions for their children.
It's not only not evil, it's a ministry as well. It really is. And we really had to, Vicki is our development director, and she and I went through a class together and really learned that's a part of the ministry as well, is inviting other people to be a part of the ministry. And the way they could be a part of it is by financially supporting, that they're blessed by that too. They're part of our team members. We call everybody who's part of giving in any way, whether they're on our prayer team or they're financially giving, they're all part of that ministry. They all have a part in a woman choosing Christ as her Savior. They all have a part in choosing life for her baby, and everyone's essential.
Amen. So on the side of how, if somebody's listening and they go, well, I'd love to be able to do something like this, and they just want to volunteer for a while to figure out what you all do and mm-hmm. how it works, but they also want to help in the process, what are the different jobs they can do? What are the kinds of things they could come and talk to you about?
Well, I heard you mention that you had people that were in a counseling mm-hmm. curriculum, and mm-hmm. definitely you can come in and do that. We've had many interns that are college students from different colleges, Christian colleges are a preference, who come in and can use some of their intern hours and come and do counseling there, as you might probably guess that we have people that are in some pretty dire circumstances. This isn't their first bad choice. Many of them have had lots. They've been victims. They've had things perpetrated against them, and so they have a lot of scars, a lot of issues that they're dealing with. We have people that are coming out of the sex trade that are part of our clientele as well. We have women. We ask the question, when did you begin having sex? And we often have girls say, when somebody did it to me or when I chose to do it. Because we have lots and lots that have been molested from the time they were a child. And so that opportunity is there. For people that like projects, we always have a honey-do list that has projects that we need. For guys that just want to come and support guys that are coming, we could really use some Christian men hanging around on Wednesday evenings when we're doing those classes and just encouraging them and saying, way to go. You didn't, you know, take a run for it when you found out your girlfriend was pregnant and you're here trying to learn something, just to encourage them. It's just like you talk about encouraging somebody at 7-Eleven. Just encourage these people.
So there are a lot of different ways you can volunteer, get involved, and help. And like she said, I mean, they have you know, you have to receive people, you have to counsel them, mm-hmm. you have to give them the actual information. Somebody has to walk them room to room. Somebody has to help them with the, you said you have a, I've forgotten what you call it, but where they can spend their baby bucks.
We Care Shop.
We Care Shop. Mm-hmm. Okay. So, you know, but that has to be, it has to be stocked and people have to take care of the mm-hmm. stuff and, you know, receive the money. And that's parents who are afraid they're not going to have enough money to take care of their kids being able to walk into that store with the bucks they got because they came to the whatever training, counseling, and all that
classes.
Other stuff.
Mm-hmm.
They show up and they just spend that money to get the diapers, which makes a huge difference when you're trying to take care of a kid and you need more diapers and you don't have 15 extra bucks to go buy diapers. So that kind of, if you want to get involved with any of that, I just really want to encourage you to hang around and talk with them. There are other options too. And so we haven't talked about the Uptown Women's Center. And mm-hmm. I want you to hear this for two reasons. One is just to know it's part of what they do. It's part of their ministry. But also so that you think to yourself when you're leading in service, when you're a leader in your community, when you're a leader in your church, whatever it is, wherever you're expressing your service opportunity, that you think there are other groups we need to reach as well. And so would you describe how you started the Uptown Women's Center, why it got started, and what it is and all that?
Sure. Okay. We had seen the Lord really bless our ministry a few years ago and just had a tremendous turnaround. And so at the end of the year, our board of directors said, Carolyn, that is great. We want you to double that for next year. And I went, well, I'm almost dead from this year, but okay, no problem. But one of the things that we understood is within our facilities that we had, we couldn't double the population to be able to serve them. And so we looked for another place that we could open a second center. And what we realized as we began to study is that it was not just a geographic need, but it was a demographic need, that the majority of people who were coming into pregnancy centers were lower socioeconomic. They were coming because of the free services many times. And so for us, it was like, well, where is a woman going who's college educated, who's a young professional? She's going straight to the abortion clinic because she has no financial impediment. And so we did a lot of research, did a lot of focus groups to try to figure out how to create a place where she would come. And from that was birthed the Uptown Women's Center. So it's located in Uptown, one block off of McKinney Avenue, right next to the Whole Foods. And we survived their construction because we were there before they were. And boy, was that fun. But that's where we're there. We don't do social services there. We don't do Earn While You Learn program. This is for women that would not normally be attracted by those kinds of programs. And we do counseling there. We do have people that come in that actually do need those social services. There's wait staff that work mm-hmm. in the restaurants, all those restaurants that are over there. And so those kinds of folks. And so we refer them to our downtown location, which is about 8 minutes away, and they can come and get all those support services if they need them. But it was just a recognition that there was another demographic of women that we were not reaching with a traditional pregnancy center setting. And so for us, well, let's create a way to reach her too.
Yeah, so again, vulnerable and underserved doesn't equate to poor. Poor is just the first and most obvious expression of it. But it's in a variety of ways, and this is a really good ministry as well. And Sonograms on Site also, where, you know, describe that ministry, but also where it ends up being of most use or where it has been in your experience.
Well, it was originally birthed to be right out in front of abortion clinics, and so that we could give a woman a one last chance, an opportunity to come on board. It's a mobile pregnancy center on our bus and be able to have a sonogram before she went into the abortion clinic. Occasionally we caught women after they came out of the abortion clinic, but before their procedure, and were able to do the sonogram then. The facilities changed, the surroundings changed, and so we changed with that ministry as well. There was a law that was passed in Texas, a very good law called HB2, that caused abortion clinics to have to come up to the standards of an ambulatory health clinic. And so that meant, you know, like a regular doctor's office, it'd have to have those same kinds of standards. And so many, many abortion clinics in Dallas closed. In fact, we were down to two at one time. That law went all the way to the Supreme Court and was eventually overturned a few years ago. But when that happened and we were down to two abortion clinics, those were mega surgical centers that were very intentional, and they built huge walls around them, one being the new Planned Parenthood that opened a few years ago in South Dallas, very strategically placed in the population that they like to target. And so We were out there with our bus right as soon as they opened. Funny story, I think I've shared with you before, is they turned the water sprinklers on us while we were standing on the sidewalk. It was fine. It was a hot day. But the next week, they put up an 8-foot wall. And so we realized we were very ineffective in being able to reach women because they drove straight in behind that 8-foot wall and parked. And at the same time, the Lord is so good because we were really stressed about what are we going to do with this beautiful mobile pregnancy center that we have that's totally ineffective. And we got a phone call from a nurse at one of the colleges, and so now we're on college campuses, several college campuses in the DFW area. And so we provide services there. We do sonograms. We also do STD screening, which is real popular on a college campus. And then we refer them back to one of our other centers, our brick and mortar for treatment.
All right. And also, y'all are making a change, or you're working toward a change in your downtown facility. Do you want to talk about that for just a second?
Let
them know what's coming.
This is a huge step. Our board made a decision. It's been almost 2 years ago now when I was writing and working on something this week. It was like, wow, that's been almost 2 years since we had that meeting. But we made a decision that if we were going to really, really make a dramatic impact, then we wanted to do everything that Planned Parenthood claims to do, who's the number one abortion provider in the United States and the world. But we wanted to do everything that they claim to do, except abortion, of course, and also offer prenatal care, which they don't do. So if a woman's pregnant and she walks into Planned Parenthood, she really only has one choice, either walk out or else have an abortion. So our board made that pledge that we would do that, and we've been going through a process getting an accreditation for a medical accreditation called AAAHC, big, hairy, lots of books and lots of paperwork that we have to go through. But the big challenge is that we needed a medical facility, and so we've identified a building. We're in a $3 million capital campaign. I wear a bracelet that says God is big enough, because I know I'm not to do any of this. But that's what we're in the process of doing, is building a full medical clinic where we'll offer all well woman medical services as well as prenatal care, and we'll even be accredited to be able to deliver babies there if we decide to.
Yeah, it's a really impressive change, and it's going to cost a lot of money, and you have a lot of barriers between now and then, but the Lord will see you through them.
Absolutely.
Because you're serving people.
He's faithful.
So anything else you want to share with them before we're done with the interview part of this, just talking about your ministry, anything you would want them to know about what you've gone through in building the program? And I mean that, you and your people. I know it's not just you alone.
No, but
you've been a part of it for how many years? 30 years?
Well, I've been part of the pro-life movement for 30 years. I've been at this center for 14.
14 years, okay. So been a part of it for a long time. So if you just want to share a word of advice, guidance, or invitation, any of that, last word from you.
Well, I really believe that this is one of the most important issues that is facing our country right now. And so I challenge you to educate yourself. And I see a lot of guys sitting in the audience, and I want you to know this is not a woman's issue. This is a believer's issue. This is not a political issue. This is an issue of the heart. It speaks to the very core of what you believe about God. You either believe that He is a creator of all life or He's not, that He makes mistakes sometimes, or He turned His head and, oops, somebody got pregnant. So you either believe He created all life, and then you believe that He created all life with a purpose and a plan, that there's no mistakes, even in rape, that there is no mistake there, that baby that's been created has a purpose and a plan that God has already predestined. And so then you believe that that woman that is carrying that baby is not a tramp, she is not trash, she is not, she shouldn't have been there, she was in the wrong place at the wrong time. You believe that she too was created by God for a purpose and a plan, and one of the purposes He had was for her to be a mother to carry this baby. And you also believe that the majority of time that man is supposed to be a part of that baby's life as well, that he was created with a purpose and a plan, and that's to protect and provide for that child. And that's exactly what God created him for. And so if you believe all of that, then you believe that you've got to do something to help empower these people and to educate these people to be able to do what God has called them to do, which is to parent a child. And so I love talking to college students because y'all are the future. You're the ones that can help not only change the laws, but you can help change the culture. You can change people's hearts by the way you react to this issue. That if you react to it compassionately and without judgment, and if you get in and serve, and so I love Dr. Creamer talking about, this is about serving people. It's about caring about something at the very core of it, and your caring turns into action. And so that's what you do. You get involved. Educate yourself. I'd love for you to come to our center anytime. You're welcome to come. Be glad to give you a tour. Love for you to read A Woman's Right to Know, because that is a lot of information in there. You can get it online, or we'll be glad to give you a booklet at our center. But you need to be educated. You are the ones that are going to be out in your community, in your culture, and you're the ones that can change this. I believe that we can change our culture. I truly do. I wouldn't be at this and working at it so hard and delighting in what I'm doing if I didn't believe that there is great hope that we can change our culture. But it's about educating, and it's about us getting involved as believers. We can't sit on the sidelines and say that's somebody else's issue. This is about everybody in this room educating yourself, empowering yourself so that you can make a change in this issue.
You said everything I was going to say in my close. So I'm just going to pray, and we're going to be done, and I'm going to invite you all to talk with Vicki or Karen or Carolyn if you are interested at all in serving with them, or just asking a question. You know, how did you do this? How did you get it across the line? How did you make it happen? Where is it going next? How can I get involved? If you have any of those questions, please talk with them about it. You know, when you go out into the world, even now, where you serve, in your church, in your clinic, in your school, wherever it is, just, you know, in Jesus' words, lift up your eyes and see the harvest. There are people just waiting for someone to serve them. They're just waiting for somebody to care about them. And I think we've done ourselves a disservice in the pro-life movement by focusing only on one thing and neglecting all the populations that are involved in that. We ought to value the life of the baby, the crisis of the woman, and minister to all of those so that we can save the baby's life, and so that we can serve the woman, and so that we can serve the child as it grows up, and so that we can just do what Jesus called us to do. But beyond this particular ministry, I'm inviting you just to open your eyes and see, where is the population that's in need, and how can I be a part of meeting that need? How can I help create the opportunity to serve that need? That's just one of the aspects of what it would mean to be a faithful follower. So I'm going to pray with you and pray with us, and then we'll be dismissed, okay? Father, thank you so much for this opportunity to speak with Carolyn. I thank you for her ministry. Pray that you would bless it, bless them for their work today as they visit with young women who show up, older women who show up, and are facing a crisis they did not expect and don't know what to do with. I pray that they would find that you love them, that you have blessed them with a little life that's growing inside of them, and will bless them with people who will love them through the whole process of seeing that life come into the light of this world and bear your image with all the rest of us. Lord, I pray that you would make us humbly faithful, serving those you care about in this world. In Jesus' name, amen.